This podcast is part of the Everyday Heroes Podcast Network, the network for first responders and those who support them.
So they invited us, a couple of us, over to a party. And at the party, one of my SWAT team / narcotics guys told me that on the way to that search warrant, they were all calling me a rat and a snitch because my SWAT team commander and my lieutenant...
Welcome to the Off Duty Podcast, the podcast where we interview the men and women of law enforcement and help you to learn about the person behind the badge. If this is your first time tuning in, thank you. My name is Anthony McNeil, retired police officer and your host. Let's get started. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode number 66 of the Off Duty Podcast. Once again, it's me, your boy, Anthony McNeil, back with another fantastic guest joining me on the podcast. And we just went over this, but I know I'm going to screw her last name up, so I apologize now. But please help me welcome Ms. Bridget Truxillo.
Very close. Truxillo.
Truxillo. I told you, I am awful with names. You can tell me 10,000 times, I will mess it up. It's just that simple. But Bridget is the CEO and founder of Protective Wellness. She spent 4.5 years in law enforcement before leaving the profession to attend law school. She's from the state of Texas. Bridget, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you hopping on the podcast. We've had some back and forth with scheduling here, but we finally got everything worked out. And I am honored to have you here joining me. Looking forward to getting to learn more about you and everything that you have going on. For all the listeners that listen on a regular basis, you guys know how I start each podcast off, and that's very simply, Bridget, why law enforcement?
It's such a good question. Number one, I was graduating from college, and it hit me that I didn't want to do what my degree was in. My degree is in environmental horticulture,
okay,
plants. So I didn't want to do that. And I'd worked at a health club for a year before that, and then fitness was always important to me, and thought it'd be good if I could have a job that required me to be fit. And I like a challenge. So nobody in my family had ever been in law enforcement before. So there's no background with that. And I just thought it'd be cool to number one, have a job that required me to be fit. But then number two, you get to give back. You get to do something for your community. And I consider myself kind of on the dorky end of that, in the sense that, you know, I very much believe in the rule of law and that people should follow the rules. And it just felt like a fit for me to be able to do something where I got to help maintain peace and the rule of law within our community and society. And so I decided to be a cop. And then I also thought that I wanted to do like federal level, so FBI, DEA, and did local law enforcement as an avenue to get there. Because I was local law enforcement, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but I ended up was in the undercover narcotics unit and I was on the SWAT team. But when I was in the undercover narcotics unit, I met a lot of federal investigators and so kind of opened my eyes to what that world would be like, meaning that it wouldn't be that much different with the issues that you face at the federal level. Mm-hmm. So we can get into that about why I left to go to law school. But yeah, I just thought that I wanted to help do my part within society, and then I wanted a job that required me to be active.
Yeah. Now, once you got into law enforcement, seeing that you had no family history or anything in the profession, once you got involved in the profession, was it what you thought it would be?
Well, when I was thinking about doing that, and also because I wanted to make sure I was going into it eyes wide open, I did a couple ride-alongs. I knew somebody that knew somebody, and I met, and I was like, he was a lieutenant at the time. He's like, well, you should do a couple ride-alongs so you can see what it's like. And I did it with the sheriff's office, ended up getting hired by the sheriff's office. They paid me to go through the academy, which was great because it's something they had stopped doing and hadn't done in a long time. So now I wasn't as broke as I was going to be otherwise, but did a couple of those ride-alongs, and that was eye-opening. Just seeing, like, I remember one of them, we went on a domestic violence call, and it really bothered me. It bothered me bad to see, because I live in, you know, I'm blessed. I have two loving parents. I mean, they were divorced, but, you know, loving parents. And so I didn't live in a world where I saw people beat each other up. And so to see two people that would be willing, you know, to hurt each other like that, it really bothered me. And I think I was even trying not to cry on the scene.
Really?
And I just want to say this, when you become a cop, you end up losing that of course, because you see stuff like that all the time. But then that's also what ends up happening to you as cops, is that that becomes, you become desensitized to emotion and human life. And I think that's a very dangerous place to be. But to go back to that, when I got into patrol, and one of the first things I realized is that being in patrol, unfortunately, the whole donut egg thing is kind of true. And we all know that there are a lot of people in patrol that are very unfit and unhealthy and severely overweight. And, you know, so that's one of the reasons I quickly turned to the narcotics unit. And then they put a post up to try out for SWAT team after my first year. And I thought, well, you definitely got to be fit. And so I guess, you know, I just didn't know what to expect at all. I've heard stories about people going to police academies where the police academies are really tough, or like apparently NYPD used to be, you know, super tough, and they'd be really hard screaming at people. And I guess I don't think anybody gets screamed at anymore for police academies, but you know, we're a softer, gentler nation now.
Yes. Yes. Isn't that the truth?
So I didn't have a bad experience in the police academy. I got the highest fitness award when the police academy, which kind of surprised me because I had, like, you know, former Marine in there, total jarhead looking dude, totally good guy, but totally fit the mold for a Marine and what they look like. And then I went in and certainly the violent, I mean, it's the things you see, and then, you know, it certainly changes who you are. You don't come out of law enforcement the person you were when you went in.
That's for sure.
The part that I didn't expect was the stuff that came up later, which is when I was the only female on SWAT, and then almost all the same guys on my narcotics unit were also on SWAT team. And the difficulties I had with that was what surprised me.
Which was?
Not the job itself, I don't think. I mean, it sucked to go see people that get beat up, like domestic violence victims. I don't know. I spoke at an event last night where there was a lady that supports domestic violence victims, but also does some training for the offenders to help them learn different ways. Mm-hmm. And so that must be on my mind. But, you know, you see the women that get beat up over and over and go back over and over. I remember one time we had to trick this lady to tell us where her husband was after he had just broken her face up, threw her down the stairs, fractured her cheekbone. I mean, it was just horrible. And we tricked her into telling us where he was. And so we ended up arresting him. And then she was in my car in the back to me when she realized we were arresting him, and she went ballistic that we were arresting him.
That's not uncommon either.
No. You know, the hardships of seeing how kids grow up, that's one of the things that bothered me the most, is if they had a mattress that was on the floor with no sheets on and all their clothes were piled up on one end of the bed, and you think, like, these are kids, like, that's not how it's supposed to be. And it was heartbreaking to me to see that part of it. So that part sticks with you, you know?
That's for sure. For the listener out there, if you're not in law enforcement, all these things that Bridget is describing, unfortunately, is something that law enforcement deal with and see on a day-to-day basis. And for someone that's not used to seeing that, it can be a initial shock at first, because you have no idea that people live that way. You mentioned domestic violence. I remember a couple that lived in the city that I worked in. I can't tell you how many times we had gone to the house. And this one night we went there, the lady had a knot on her head, probably about the size of my fist. And she refused to leave. You know, the guy was a big time drug dealer, and, you know, he had money and all this stuff, and she enjoyed the lifestyle. But with that came all the abuse, you know. And I remember we went to court. It was probably about 3 months later, and her head was still swollen from that night. You say to yourself, how can someone continue to live like that? But people do. And until you get into this profession, a lot of times people have no idea. Now, you mentioned there was something once you got into SWAT that you was not expecting. What was that? If you can talk about it.
I knew being the only female in SWAT was going to be different. They had never had a female before. I don't think they've had another one since. But what I wasn't expecting is that over the years that my effort, I didn't show up and give 50%. I mean, I always showed up and gave 100%, but we're all human. So every human, even when you're giving 100%, you make mistakes. And I made mistakes, and they always got spotlighted. I got written up so many times. I got 500 mountain climbers one time for doing something wrong. I got a letter put in my file for remembering to lock a door on our SWAT van, but the SWAT van is in a secure compound. I mean, just over and over and over again. And we competed in SWAT Roundup International. If anybody's on SWAT, they've probably heard of it. It still goes on. It's teams from around the country, I mean, around the world, come to compete in the SWAT competition. It's a 5-day thing, and it was so cool. And I mean, like, it's the closest I've ever gotten to be like a paid athlete, because I was getting paid and I was getting to train all the time, and it was so fun. You know, but I competed in that twice. I had to try out with my own team members and got to make the team. So I beat out some of my own SWAT team members to make the SWAT competition team. And then when we were there, there was like roughly about 75 teams a year at the time, 6 people on each team. So 75 times 6 is a lot. And the first year I was there, there was 3 females, including me. The second year I was there, there was 2 females, including me. And I was competing. And even after all that, these guys seeing me sprint, rappel, run, shoot, helped carry heavy bag, which is the equivalent of pulling a person out of a building. What I was not expecting is that none of that mattered. I never got to the point where they respected me as an operator, that would give me an opportunity as an operator. I called it the bread van. You see like the Wonder Bread. They had like the bread van, kind of like the UPS truck, only white, that we would drive with all of our equipment in it whenever we would go out with SWAT. My job was always only ever to drive the van.
Wow.
And one time they put me on an entry team, and we kind of had like captains within the team, and like one of the guys on narcotics. So we worked together all the time. He was in charge of putting together the entry team that day. He put me as the third person. So you have the 2 shields. And when you're entering and are entering a home for like a search warrant is what it was. So you have 2 shields that go in. You have the battering ram guy, you have the 2 shields, and you have somebody who throws in the flashbang. All this happens all at the one time so that you can get in and have the element of surprise as you enter the building. And I did the flashbang, and then I had a position on the team to help clear the rooms so that you can secure the house. So that then I would switch hats and put my narcotics investigator hat, and then we would then take over and search for what we were searching for. One time I got put on an entry team, and I found out a couple years later that he was berated for doing that.
Really?
And I never got to, nobody ever put me on an entry team again.
Wow. Now I have to ask, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but why go through the trouble of putting you on the team in the first place if that's the attitude and the way you're going to be treated?
My SWAT commander told me explicitly and exactly 3 different times, the only reason you're on this team is because the captain made me do it.
Wow.
And the third time, it was he and I working out in the gym at our sheriff's office. And the third time, I literally just stopped what I'm doing. And I'm thinking, like, I've competed on SWAT Roundup for you. He was also my lieutenant in narcotics. Like, you see me doing everything you tell me to do. And I try hard every single time. And am I perfect? No. But did I give like 100% effort every single time? Yes. And the third time, and we're the only 2 people in the gym working out. I mean, I just thought at some point we'd get to the point where, like, okay, maybe I've been wrong. Maybe you have something that of value to contribute to the team. And like, of course, I'm not the big 250-pound guy that could, you know, handle the battering ram the way he can. But I mean, that doesn't mean I wouldn't have a role on the team that could significantly contribute. And I literally just stopped what I'm doing, and I looked at him and I said, "Lieutenant, I heard you the first 2 times," and tried to go back to my workout, just being like, my heart was racing like 1,000 beats a minute, and I was just so upset. But I didn't want him to see that. And it was not long after that, it just got to the point where even my captain got wind of like them constantly writing me up, because he would see all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. One time I got in trouble for something, and my punishment was, we had this big RV that we had confiscated from somebody that was in our compound in the narcotics unit. If we weren't going down some rabbit trail of drug world, we got off at midnight. And so I got off at midnight, and they said, "No, you got to take this RV and go wash it." Like, I mean, first of all, I've never driven a vehicle that size. Well, okay. And then the 2 people that I worked with in the narcotics unit at the time felt bad for me, so they went with me. Well, as I'm driving the RV out of the compound, the tail end, I nicked the tail end. Like, it's so long. And I broke a little bit of the taillight off. I come to work the next day, and I have a crash report in my inbox. Well, of course, the captain sees all crash reports, you know, because that's a big liability for an agency,
right,
is crashes. And the captain got wind of it, talked with the lieutenant, and this was like, he had heard other things. And finally he called me into the office that day, and he said, "Look, you're not getting written up for this." And basically he told my lieutenant, like, "Lay off of her. You guys need to stop. I'm seeing all the letters you put in her file. This is ridiculous." And so
how long ago are we talking here?
I left in December of 2004.
Okay.
So a while ago.
Okay.
And I can say one of the guys that I was on SWAT with ended up becoming the SWAT commander Unfortunately, they just got a new sheriff, and so he's changing everything, and he just unceremoniously removed him from SWAT team completely and transferred him from the gun interdiction team to the courthouse. Like, there is a leadership issue in law enforcement.
Yeah.
But it's at many departments, not all. I've certainly met some really great chiefs this year. But anyway, that was the part that was really hard, because I gave every part of my being to that. This was not that long after Columbine High School incident. Everybody remembers. I mean, if maybe super young people don't remember it, but anybody of our age remembers the Columbine High School shooting mm-hmm. incident. And, you know, part of that issue with that was that at the time they were trained to not go in, wait. I don't know if it was waiting for the SWAT team or just waiting for a plan to come up. You know, part of the sad part about that story is that there were kids who had been shot that bled out that could have possibly survived had they gone in and gotten them help.
Right.
And so we would train all the time in SWAT on active shooter in schools. And so or one time it was summer. This was not long before I left the team. Summertime, so school wasn't in, and we were practicing active shooter scenarios in a high school that didn't have students in it at the time. And we were taking a break, and it was in a not good neighborhood. And I come out, and I must be one of the first people that walked out, and I see my sergeant from my sergeant on the narcotics unit and also one of the team captains on SWAT who gave me the harder time than anybody. I see his, so he's also, he was on SWAT. He's a team captain, also a sniper. So he has all the guns in his car, ammunition, guns, flashbangs, grenades. I mean, all of it. And I come out, his windows are down. The trunk is open, which is where all the guns and the ammunition are kept. And I just literally walked out, and I was like, I'm looking around like, does anybody else see this? Am I the only one? Because if I did that, they would be, screaming it to the heavens, yeah, to say, and writing me up or getting me suspended. I mean, they would have just gone ballistic on me over it. And nobody, I don't know if they didn't see it. Nobody said anything. No, nothing. And that just ate at me for a couple of days. And so finally I went into my SWAT team commander, went into his office, and I said, hey, I'm just going to tell you what I saw. I didn't say whose car it was. And he's like, well, who was this? I said, I don't want to tell you who it was. I'm just going to say it was a car of a fellow SWAT team member, and it was completely open on the east side where it's not a good part of the county. And if I would have done that, you would have eaten me alive. And I said, I am not asking for better treatment. I'm just asking for equal treatment.
Right.
And he looked at me and said, don't make trouble for yourself where there's not any. And I said, well, I don't really understand what that means. I'm just asking for equal treatment. Like, if I get in trouble for something, everybody should get in trouble for something. If nobody else gets in trouble for something, then I shouldn't get, like, just that's all I'm asking. And it was, again, like, I was trying not to show. I was so nervous about it. It was just the whole thing was so disappointing. I said, well, he reiterated it. Don't make trouble for yourself where there's not any.
Yeah.
I said, okay, again, I don't really understand what that means, but okay, I left. Not long after that, we executed a search warrant where I had done the undercover buys. I was buying cocaine or crack, I don't remember, from a guy where he had a rifle sitting right next to him. So my life was definitely at risk doing this. I had got three different buys from this house way out in the country. Mm-hmm. I got the search warrant. We go execute the search warrant. Of course, I'm in the bread van. We had the assault vehicle and we had the bread van. I was driving the bread van. I was not in the assault vehicle with the team. And it's like an armored vehicle. I don't mean like to the audience out there, we weren't assaulting anyone with a vehicle. It was just an armored vehicle to protect the team as they drive up. And about a week later, I was at a party that some of the attorneys that we worked with, the attorneys who gave us our search warrants, we would see them all the time. So those of us who did that work became, you know, friendly with the attorneys. So they had invited us, a couple of us, over to a party. And at the party, one of my SWAT team / narcotics guys told me that on the way to that search warrant, they were all calling me a rat and a snitch, because my SWAT team commander and my lieutenant in the narcotics unit had told everybody what I had told him, that I was trying to snitch on somebody on the team.
Wow.
Which was not the case. And I left the party as quick as I could. I got in the car and I was crying so hard, I could hardly drive home. I called my mom and I was so upset, because it hit me so hard that this was after two SWAT team competitions. Like, it hit me so hard that nothing I did was ever going to matter to
me. Yeah. Now,
and
I have to ask,
yeah,
given all that you went through, it sounds like in mm-hmm. a short period of time, I would imagine it probably left a bad taste in your mouth towards the profession. Was that part of your decision to leave and go into law school?
Absolutely. I thought I wanted to do federal law enforcement. Well, I met a lot of federal law enforcement officers. And what I realized is that I was going to face the same issues just with, I mean, no offense to anybody federal out there. This was my impression at the time, was that I was just going to have the same issues just with bigger egos.
Yeah.
And I realized that I did not need to spend the rest of my life trying to prove you I could do a job I knew I could do, and that there could be a different way for me to give back. I still knew that law enforcement officers deserve to have the right tools to feel happy, and that there could be a way for me to give back and help in a different way, because me being at the sheriff's office, and yet I knew I still wanted to be involved in the law enforcement world to help. So yes, it left a bad taste in my mouth. I didn't speak to anybody on my team. That year I got out, I still went to SWAT Roundup because I wanted to see, because I loved it. I just loved being there. Mm-hmm. And I saw a couple guys from another team and like, oh, hey, and we heard you're not on the team anymore. Oh, we heard that you got kicked off because you got caught lying about something. Like, what? I mean, it just kept, the hits kept coming. And so I didn't talk to anybody on my team except for the guys that were on the narcotics unit with me. One of them, unfortunately, passed way too early, but the other one, we're still friends. And he and I have kept in touch. And then another girl, but like the SWAT team guys, I didn't talk to them for at least 12 years.
Yeah.
Because it hurts so bad. It just hurts so bad. So it left a bad taste in my mouth, but not in the sense that I just was like, screw all of law enforcement. You guys can all burn. No, I knew that I wanted to help and give back. I knew that I had something to give that way. And also that by being an attorney, I knew I had a unique way I could do that.
Okay. And that's a good place to segue into protective wellness. Can you explain and talk about how that came about and what it's all about?
Yes. So I've been an attorney for a long time, and you know, I got out of law school, moved from Florida to Texas for my now husband, and just got a job, you know, because I just needed to start paying off law school, and ended up being in litigation for a very long time, but kept trying to get out of it because I knew that I wanted to do something that involved law enforcement. I knew something that would be cool if I could be an attorney and then somehow do something that involved investigative work. I just did not like the law firm world. I don't really like litigation in general, but I mean, I learned a lot from it in a way that I can help guide and give back to law enforcement if they're dealing with something like that. But about a couple of years ago, I finally decided, you know, screw this. Life is too short. I know I have something to give back. And I started working on what that would look like. And that evolved into what protective wellness is. And protective wellness is a legal support and wellness training company. It's a membership-based business where when you join the membership, one of the things that you get is access to me as an attorney for legal advice. So you join the membership, you log in, you click a button, say book a call with an attorney, and it actually takes you away from protective wellness over to a law firm site where you book a call, and it's 30-minute consultation on anything. Because I believe that number one, cops don't just worry about work. Like all humans, you have plenty of things to worry about. And those legal questions you have might not be job related. So it's not limited to the job. It could be, I've had landlord-tenant questions, child custody questions, property transfer after the loss of a family member questions. I mean, it could be anything. And it can be job related, discrimination, retaliation, workers' comp. I get questions about that a lot. You know, definitely questions on vaccine mandates. Unfortunately, there's not much I can do to help you with that. Mm-hmm. But that's one thing you get. And then the legal support also spills over into the wellness training side. Like every month you get a live training, like a seminar, webinar. It's the first week of every month. This week it was Know Thyself, How Self-Awareness Can Improve Your Mental Health. We focused it on the Enneagram personality test, where if you take this test and really get an understanding of what your personality is and how that motivates you, that can help you interact better with others, including on the job. And if you're interacting better with others, then hopefully you're decreasing incidents of injury and also improving community relations. So even though something as simple as understanding who you are can have positive effects that spill over into your community. So we do live training next month. It's going to be on nutrition and really understanding how your nutrition affects your whole body, including your performance on the job. And I'm partnering with the nutritionist from LAPD on that. So anyway, you get live training the first week of every month. The second week, you get a legal video from me. So last month, it was on qualified immunity, like understanding what qualified immunity is from a boots on the ground level. What does it mean? Does it apply to you? What happens if it doesn't apply to you? You know, and does that mean you're going to go to prison and lose your house? I'm just going to tell you, no, doesn't mean that you're going to be automatically sent to prison just because you don't get qualified immunity. But this month, it's going to be on seizure and just making sure that you understand how a seizure can happen, even if you're not putting hands on somebody, because that's important to know. And I think I call it the lingual fundamentals video, is the things that you're taught in the academy or the beginning. And it's just, it's like the NBA. Those guys work on dribbling all the time. You think they've probably dribbled a million hours? Yes, but they still work on dribbling. And I think it's always important to focus on the fundamentals, because my intention behind that is to give you information and knowledge so that you worry a little bit less, feel a little bit more confident in the decisions you make on the job, so that you're just worrying less and feel more confident in what you're doing. And all of that, the goal is for you to just feel a little bit happier every day. And we also do wellness training. So the third and fourth things you get each month are wellness trainings from me in the form of an email and meetings on implementing routines and habits in your daily life that positively impact your wellness. So physical, mental, spiritual, and doing them every single day so that you can, number one, do them without, they just become habit. You do them every day. And then number two, reap the positive benefits from that, so that, again, you can start to feel happy, balanced, joyful, despite what the job and the culture and the media says. Mm-hmm. So, we can't change what the job is about. We can't change what politicians are doing. We can't change the weather, but you still have the ability to affect your happiness level. And I know cops earn this job for a reason. They don't want to leave the job. They're frustrated with what's happening now. But my goal is to give people the tools to feel happy so that they'll stay in the job, because we need law enforcement.
Yeah.
With people who say, no, we don't need cops. Yes, you do. You need the people who are willing to run towards the gunfire.
For sure.
You need the people who are willing to go deal with the violence and the death and the mayhem so that you don't have to, so that you can live in a world where you feel safe and secure. And that's what law enforcement does for you. And they're still human, who need to be able to live a balanced and joyful life so that they perform better, the community's happier, all that. So that's a long way of saying of what protective wellness is, but legal support and wellness training, and you get that training in different ways from me.
It sounds like you get a lot. How much is the membership?
$67 a month.
That's it? Yeah. Wow.
And my normal hourly rate as an attorney is a lot more than that.
I'm sure.
I've been an attorney a long time. So it's an amazing value, considering that you get the legal side of it with it. And what I tell people on the legal side is, come early and come often is what I say with that. If you have any kind of question, you get to book a call with an attorney and ask a question. And I also like to say, if you're in a union, stay in a union. I don't replace unions. And unions are limited in what type of support they give you legally, mm-hmm. The legal support. Most unions, there are a few that I've heard of, not the big ones, but mostly unions help you with job-related incidents, use of force, disciplinary actions, not really anything outside of that. But as I described, I can help with anything, because I just think that overall, if you're alleviating worry, you perform better, you feel happier.
Now, speaking of the legal side, you're based out of Texas. Do you practice in other states? Or because if someone's a member and they need legal advice that's not in the state of Texas, how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually licensed in 4 states. Okay. I've taken 4 bar exams, and I hope I never, ever do that again. Texas, Florida, New York, and Louisiana, in that order. But it comes down to, it's like a legalese. It's called choice of law. I've been in litigation for a very long time. From that, I've learned that you don't always need a lawsuit filed to deal with a legal question. Mm-hmm. The questions I get about, what are my remedies if my landlord's doing X? Or this is the landlord-tenant issue. It doesn't matter. All I need to do is look up maybe the nuances within your state on that particular topic. And I'm giving you advice. Most of the time, you don't actually need to be filing a lawsuit for something.
Now, where can someone go to get more information about protective wellness?
That's a great question. So my protective wellness is the website. And, one of the things I like to tell people is, I say, it's so important to have such positive impact on your life if you're doing these routines and habits each day to deal with your wellness, physical, mental, spiritual. And I have a free download on my website. It tells you what I mean by that. It just breaks it down. It's 7 steps. And here's, 7 steps to basically automate your wellness training. But ultimately, it's to be happy again. It is possible to be a cop and be happy. But here's how, it gives people the 7 steps of what I mean by that and how you start it, how you implement it. But that's what we do monthly. I heard somebody say this about a month ago in some training I was doing. You brush your teeth every day because you grow up and say, if you want healthy teeth, you got to brush your teeth every day. It's not like you say, brush your teeth once and say, I'm good.
Right.
I won't ever have a cavity because I brushed my teeth once. Nope. You're supposed to brush your teeth every day and floss every day. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that don't floss every day. I do because I'm a dork. But it's like that. It's wellness training. It's things that you need to do every day. And some people will be like, I know, it's God, that sounds like a lot. I don't have time. But yes, you do have time. One of the things I talk a lot about is within an hour a day, you could be working on your mental, physical, and spiritual selves. And I do it. Like 10 minutes of meditation, 5 minutes of writing at the beginning and end. So total, that's 10 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes of exercise. I'm not a SWAT anymore, so I don't train for 2 hours anymore. Plus, I have 3 kids, so that don't work. But within an hour a day, I do a lot of work for me personally that I make sure I create time for. And that still leaves a lot of hours in the day for you to do everything else you need to do. But that it's so important that you take care of yourself first, because you cannot take care of others if you're not starting it with a full cup.
Yeah.
So
great advice.
That's some of what that free download gives you, is breaks down what I mean, that the why, you know, like the how and the specific what, like here's what you can do to start working on these things.
I'm going to put a link down to the website in the show notes. So guys, please go over and check that out. Make sure you grab that free download that Bridget is talking about there. And I want to go ahead and jump into my first segment here. Okay. And this is what I call dig deeper. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a good segue because for those that don't know, Dig Deeper is where I get nosy and I go poking around my guest social media and I find certain posts and I craft questions around those posts. And the post that I happened to pull out was a Instagram post that you put up, and it kind of ties into what you were just talking about. And this was a picture. It was just words on it, but it says stress management, practical ways to reduce stress levels. And then your caption was, friends give you a sense of belonging and self-worth. Writing what you are grateful for helps focus on the positives in your life. It's hard to feel anxious when you're laughing. Listening to music you like can help calm you down. You recall that post?
Yep.
Okay. My first question around that post, and you said that you do this yourself. Why is writing out what you're grateful for so important when it comes to dealing with stress?
So many different ways. Number one is when you're writing down something that you're grateful for, stops you from being negative. And we are, as humans, designed to be negative. I mean, think about, you know, you're living in a cave out in the wild and you're thinking, oh, there might be an animal coming. Oh, I need, where am I going to find me? You're like, we're wired to be negative because we, from a, you know, trying to protect ourselves. So it takes effort to break that cycle. And it's as simple as, I have something, and I talk about it a lot, the 5-minute journal. It's every day I write down 3 things I'm grateful for, 3 things that I want to do today, because that's a visualization exercise, and then an affirmation. So my affirmation is sometimes one word, like I'm resilient, I'm tough, but sometimes it's I'm funny. I mean, just something, whatever. Mm-hmm. Number one is you write it down, because if you find something to be grateful for, and you can always find something, and I promise you there are days I sit there and I'm already mad, or, you know, I'm married. So like maybe we had an argument when I went to bed. So I wake up not feeling all bubbly and happy, but you can still always, no matter what, find something to be grateful for. The sun always comes up, that I have the most comfortable bed on the whole planet, that I love coffee. I mean, you can find anything. And when you do that, when you do go through that exercise of forcing yourself sometimes to find something to be grateful for, that means you're transferring it to a positive note. I call it being positive Polly instead of Debbie, being a Debbie Downer. Mm-hmm. And that is so number one is that you flipping the switch from being negative to positive. But then also the actual physical act of writing something down and translating your thoughts into words, it's actually a brain activity. It's a cognitive development. And you should never, ever stop working on cognitive development. I mean, they've done studies on, and I'm no scientist, but they've done studies on, you know, the people who live to be 100 years old that still have all of their mental capacities about them. And what have they done? And a lot of it is reading, writing. Look, I'm not a big journaler. Mm-hmm. I've never been somebody that can just write down and like, here's everything. I just don't. I've tried it different times in my life. It just doesn't work for me. But the 5-minute journal, just that 5-minute activity in the beginning and the end of the day, helps congeal and create concise thoughts, but just by putting it on paper. And it actually is like, it's a physical process that happens in your brain. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but you could Google it and you could find all these articles about why actually writing something down helps positively impact your mental health and your cognitive functioning. So that's why I say it's so important to write down, or even if you don't write it down, but I definitely recommend just, you know, get any kind of, it doesn't have to be a fancy, it could be any kind of piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Just write down three things you're grateful for. And that, if you get into that habit, it really does make a difference. And it gives me what I call a superhuman power, and you all have it available to you, to realize that you have the power to change how you feel just through a simple exercise of finding something positive. But do it all the time, because then it just helps you realize that you can recover from something even quicker than you did before.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's why with the writing.
I agree totally with what you said. And I don't know, for the listeners and yourself, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I've said this on previous podcasts before. Keeping a journal was the one thing I wish I would have done during my career, but I didn't mm-hmm. do it. And now I've actually created a journal. I don't know if you can see it here, mm-hmm. but I've created this for law enforcement. And basically what it is, it's a way for officers to document the most stressful event of their day while they're working. And I did it mm-hmm. just simply because we don't even acknowledge when the stress occurs. We're not even mm-hmm. aware of it most mm-hmm. of the time. And the idea came right. from an incident that occurred to me when I was working, where, and I'll make this short because I've told this story 100 times before on the podcast, but I had my last 5 years, I got forced to work inside because of health reasons, and I hated it. And it changed me as a person. Mm-hmm. And I started hating people. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to work one day and I said, I'm turning over a new leaf today. Things are going to be different today. Well, within 10 minutes, a guy walks mm-hmm. in and he and I are going at it and we're yelling at each other and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I'm fuming. He leaves and he goes on his way and I'm just boiling. And about 30 minutes later, this lady walks in to make an accident report, totally unrelated. I look at her and I say, can I help you? And she goes, well, I was coming to make an accident report, but you just looked at me like, what the fuck do you want? And that was exactly how I looked at her, because mentally I was still mm-hmm. dealing with the knucklehead from 30 minutes prior. You know, I never addressed mm-hmm. that stress that was built up in me. And that's what the journal mm-hmm. is for. You know, it's just a way to help you document that most stressful event. And if anyone's interested, mm-hmm. I'll probably start having it available. Just email me at tony@theoffdutypodcast.com and I'll send you the details for it. But I agree cold-heartedly that journaling is something that officers should start practicing, because it does, if nothing else, it at least helps you identify that there is something going on. Mm-hmm. And once you identify mm-hmm. it, then you have the option to fix it, you know? So
yep. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to ask you one more question, actually two more questions about that post. The next one is, mm-hmm. what makes you laugh and what brings you joy?
Well, I have three kids. They're 10, 9, and 4. So while it's also very hard, that also is, definitely a lot of joy. So my kids make me laugh. I mean, just so many different ways. Joe Rogan makes me laugh. I like Joe Rogan, not this other podcast, but his specials. And when I say laugh, I feel like there was something, I mean, I'm a big Ted Lasso fan. If anybody has not watched Ted Lasso on Apple Plus, oh my gosh. Especially the first season. Second season was a little bit disappointing, but the first season, so funny. And I get so sad when the episode's over. And then sometimes like they say so many funny things within like a short little clip that I keep rewinding it so I can catch it all. Mm-hmm. And you just like, just even talking about it, like it just makes me happy. I mean, when you find something that makes you laugh, like my husband and I can be sitting, we have three kids and we're both working and I, you know, all that. And we sit on the couch at the end of the day and we're both so tired. But if we turn on something that makes us laugh, we're more energized. We're more likely to have a conversation. And so there's so many benefits, but it's just, how can you be in a bad mood or treat yourself or others poorly if you're laughing about something? So I don't think I do it enough. I don't think I sit down to watch something that's funny. When I wrote that, I think I was looking at, you know, there's so many different ways for stress management. And I think I was looking up something and then I think I must have just watched Ted Lasso the night before because I freaking love it. But it's just, God, you know, sometimes we take ourselves too seriously, you know, or we all do. Not that sometimes we do. We all do most of the time and take life too seriously. And so just watch something that's funny and so that you can just add some lightness. And you literally, it's when you laugh, you physically feel lighter.
Yeah.
It's like you can breathe a little bit easier and you feel like life is pressing down on you less. And so that's why I just think it's such an easy thing. Watch whatever comedian you like on Netflix. They probably all have 82 specials on Netflix, but you could find something, Bert Kreischer, cracks me up. He always does his bits with no shirt on, and he's not svelte in any kind of way. He's hilarious. But laughing is just, it's to add levity and to bring light. I mean, so much of what I do is around adding light and positivity into maybe in a way you didn't have before. Because I just believe strongly in everybody that's out there listening, all humans, definitely law enforcement. And it's my goal to just positive, like my big, hairy, audacious goal is to positively affect the lives of 10,000 police officers by the time it's all said and done, whether it's directly or indirectly, 6 degrees of separation. If I can positively affect somebody who then positively affects, the people around them, then I've succeeded in life. And that's my goal. So laugh, because we'll start that process.
Great advice. Great advice. One more question I want to ask you around that post, and it has to do with the last part of it, listening to music. Listening to music you like can calm you. And my question is, when you're in the car alone, what's the one song that makes you sing out loud?
So many. I like country music.
Okay.
And I really like Midland, the band Midland. And now that you're asking me, I can't think of the name of the song. But every time it comes on, the other day I was deep in thought and I had Midland playing on Spotify or something. And that one song came on and I was singing it without even realizing I was singing it. Diana Ross is a big one for me. Ain't No Mountain High Enough. I can belt that like nobody's business when I'm in the car. And I think I sound just like her when I'm doing it by myself.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Yeah. Me and Diana are like this. I mean, I grew up like I had tapes that had Diana Ross. Like they were like tapes that had like Kenny Rogers and Diana Ross or whatever was popular at that time. And I remember my sister hated it. And I listened to that tape so much, the tape stopped working. But Diana grew up with me. I grew up with Diana as my beacon of music.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
I like that. Listen, I want to go ahead and get to the next segment. I'm going to shorten it up a little bit because we're going on almost an hour here. And I try to be respectful of your time. Usually I call this the random seven. These are just seven totally random questions that are electronically generated, but I'm going to cut it down to three for you, okay? So we can try to be respectful of your time. And the first one is, what would you rather throw away, love or money?
Money. That's hard, but yes, because money doesn't bring you love. Money makes things easier, but without love, would I be sad and alone? I mean, no.
Yeah.
That's no good.
Yeah. The next question, what's the strangest thing in your refrigerator?
I love sauerkraut. That's probably not that strange though. That's a good question. I did have kimchi in there for a while, which is not my favorite, but it's supposed to be really good for you because it has some probiotics in it, but I didn't eat it and ended up throwing it away. So I would say probably the sauerkraut. I mean, I could just take a spoonful of it every once in a while and I just like it.
Yeah. I love sauerkraut. One more here. What's your worst habit?
I don't have any bad habits, Tony. Just kidding. What's my worst habit? I don't know right now. I'm sure I have one. I mean, I go too much. I mean, it's like I train people. I mean, I implement wellness training in my life because I would be the craziest lunatic, B-I-T-C-H, if I didn't. And even with that, I still think I'm a little bit wound tight at times. And so thank goodness for my wellness routine, or I mean, I would have no friends. I probably wouldn't be married, but I don't know. I guess that's probably that. My wellness routine forces me to know when I need to slow down and become unbusy, but I try to do a lot.
Okay.
So.
All right, Bridget.
What's yours?
Procrastination.
Yeah. Oh, one of my worst habits I could say along those lines would be I get in my own way a lot, as you're developing a business and trying to put yourself out there, and I get in my own way,
Procrastination and also overthinking. I think things to death instead of sometimes letting it happen. And when I do that, I kind of get paralyzed a little bit, and not take any action sometimes, So I think those are definitely two of my faults. My wife, especially the procrastination thing, she always makes me aware of that. So I try to work on that hard and try to change that bad habit for sure.
Yeah.
I think that was probably the worst too. But I want to go ahead and get to the last segment. And this is what I call this or that.
Okay.
This is kind of like my speed round.
Okay.
I'm going to give you two topics. You simply have to pick one. Don't have to think about it and don't have to explain why if you don't want to. All right. And the first one, childhood or adulthood?
Probably adulthood.
Okay.
I moved around a lot growing up, and kids can be mean. So, like, I'm not one of those that says, oh, I'd go back to high school in a heartbeat. I hated high school because girls are brutal. So I just feel like there's nothing that can replace experience. And I'm happy where I am. I'm 46 years old, and I'm happy where I am. So adulthood.
Yeah, I think I agree. I agree with that one. No one at your funeral or no one at your wedding?
No one at my wedding. I've said for a long time, and I read this somewhere, and I don't know if it comes from 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm a big fan of that book, that you're measured, like the measure of your life is the people that show up at your funeral, like the impact that you've had on the ones around you. And that, I don't remember when I heard it. I think I heard it in my 20s, but it really stuck with me. And so, you know, I just hope that I can have a positive impact on people's lives. And, you know, like I said, just bring happiness. Because when you get married, you're probably young and don't know any better anyway.
Right.
You know, young and dumb. But no one at my funeral would be way worse. Plus, no one at your wedding is a lot cheaper.
Exactly.
So weddings are just a very expensive party.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Good point. The next one. Surround yourself with moral people or smart people?
Gosh. I would say moral, because it's one of the things I kind of talk about within the membership is we do, like the training we just did this week on understanding your personality is what I call the social emotional realm, and understanding that it doesn't matter how smart you are, if you're not in tune with who you are and making the decisions for the right reasons and being guided by your integrity on a regular basis, then it doesn't matter how smart you are. Raise your hand if you've worked with a turd head for a lieutenant who just had treated people like crap and didn't care. I mean, who cares if that person's smart?
Yeah.
So I would say moral.
All right. A couple more here. Or a few more here. Perfect job or perfect relationship?
Perfect relationship. Because I'm just now 46 years old thinking I'm finding the perfect job, and it's hard as hell. So I'm not afraid of hard. I mean, I keep choosing it, but relationship.
All right. Night owl or early bird? Or early morning.
Oh, early bird. You're going to have to finish that one. I am not a night owl. I shut down. I have a hard time being nice. That's not true. I'm a Debbie Downer at night, like doomsday. Like I have to do a meditation app sometimes at night just to stop myself from thinking about like all the things I did wrong that day, or, you know, and that doesn't do you any good. But to me, the next morning, like the sun's going to come up, it's all going to be fine. So I'm a morning person for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely a morning person. Tea or coffee?
Coffee for show. Yeah.
Street market or mall?
Street market.
Spend time with animals or spend time with strangers?
I'm kind of depend. Probably animals.
Jack of all trades or master of one?
Master of one.
And the last one, financially bankrupt or emotionally bankrupt?
Financially bankrupt, no doubt.
For sure.
Same thing for the moral, you know, because who cares if you have money if you emotionally are, you know.
Yeah, if you're a wreck, it doesn't do you any good.
Place.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Can't enjoy it. You have to be able to enjoy things first.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Bridget, listen, I appreciate you being open and sharing all the stories and allowing the listener to learn more about you and everything that you have going on. Can you do me a favor, please? Can you just give out all your social media so people can go over and follow you and again, check out what you have going on?
You know, definitely the primary thing is go to their website, myprotectivewellness.com. You'll definitely see the download where it says, be happy and be a cop. They can go hand in hand. And then on my website, you'll see at the bottom, the social media links. So, you know, I'm on all of them. I even recently started doing TikTok because they tell me that's a good thing. But I enjoy that. Like I did with TikTok post on the qualified immunity. And like, again, just if I give you 60 seconds of information that makes you feel like, oh, okay, that's not as big a deal as the media makes it sound. I'm like, no, it's not. It's fine. So my website would be go there. And I'm definitely on LinkedIn. I'm on all of them, but myprotectivewellness.com is where you can find that free download. Helps all humans. So any listeners, it's not just for law enforcement. It'll help you too. So the website, myprotectivewellness.com.
Awesome. And once again, guys, I'm going to put links to all that stuff down in the show notes. So go over and check it out. Any last words before we get out of here?
What you should do each day is do things where you can find happy, because it all starts from there. So take care of yourself. Carve out time, even if it's 5 minutes. It all matters. take care of you and you can take care of everybody else.
Amen. Amen. I agree 100%. Guys, listen, again, I appreciate you all tuning in and listening to the podcast. If you can do me a favor, if you can go to the offdutypodcast.com/reviews, leave a review on Apple. That's how we are found on all the platforms and all that stuff. When you guys follow and leave reviews on whatever platform that you listen to the podcast on. On that note, I'm out of here and I will see you guys all on the next episode. Stay safe.